Let's do 5 seconds so we have a nice big smooth gap.
Mm-hmm.
And, 5 seconds.
Starting now. That's a little more. That's good.
More.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I'm Sean Watson.
And we three are Commander in.
Yeehaw!
Whoopsh!
It's still so much fun to have Sean back.
Hi.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about three banned topics. Religion, politics, Hearthstone. Remember to head over to join our Patreon community at patreon.com/CommanderInMTG. By donating as little as $1 a show. And you'll get to be part of events like determining which card should be on our most busted bracket, maybe contributing to our next anniversary show, or even having special access to purchase a rare Commander and MTG playmat.
They're so rare, I don't even have one of them.
We should work out something, Sean.
We probably should.
This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. We're going to talk about everyone's favorite magic topic, mass land destruction. Is there controversy here?
There's a bit of controversy there, yeah.
Huh. Some people kind of not big fans of mass land destruction. Some of them are talking right now. Yeah.
And that person who may or may not have been talking just now... certainly then favors targeted land destruction.
Only if that person is using their Dragonlord Silumgar deck and is controlling the targeted land destruction. Screw you, Homeward Path. Screw you.
But first, before we dive into that, we have a bit of news, and it's sort of related. Congratulations, Sinkhole was reprinted.
Eternal Masters. You wonderful, yet simultaneously awful set.
Oh, was it Sinkhole or Wasteland?
Both. Wasteland was the very first spoiler with Force of Will. Did them both on the same day.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
With the ruined City of Brass in the artwork for Sinkhole. For Wasteland. Sinkhole, 2 black, sorcery, destroy target land. Yeah.
It doesn't get more efficient than that, does it?
Right, slap bang outside the color pie. Well, I suppose black has a bit of targeted land destruction back in the day. Demonic Hordes, Helldozer. But, yeah, efficient.
Yeah, so what do you think?
Of Sinkhole or of Eternal Masters in general?
Both.
Sinkhole reprint, sure. I think that's more for the vintage guys than the EDH guys. Oh, that'd be nice to own one, I guess. Like, it's a classic from back in the day. Eternal Masters, the set. Lovely idea. Couple of missing things as far as we know at the point of recording. Where's Damnation? Oh.
That's right.
You have to bleep one use of the word damn, but not the other.
Boop. Well, damn isn't so bad. It's the that actually sends a certain segment of our audience into a frenzy.
A frenzy.
Yes. Right now, there are people just running around grabbing speakers off the wall, hurling them to the ground, and smashing them through their glass tables.
Burning Union Jack, saying, "I'll get that dag nammit Englishman limey."
Picking up their couch cushions and just ripping them apart, and then covering their bodies with the stuffing because they've already covered themselves with honey.
Do you know what makes me want to do
that? What?
Hang on. Okay, get Phil away from the apiary. That's why he's not allowed within 500 yards of a store that sells sugary products. So the sort of thing, behavior that makes me want to act like that Phil and smash up my front room is people, say, doing massive price hikes on pre-orders of Eternal Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Or even cancelling pre-orders when they realised that this was going to be an extremely limited product that various people were going to mass buy in bulk and keep it away from the public.
Mm-hmm.
Like a fine wine fermenting on the shelf.
And that's, it's funny you bring that up, Sean, because that happened to me this morning. I pre-ordered on Monday at $284 on an MSRP of $240 for a box. And I woke up this morning to a wonderful message that it had been canceled for quote unquote technical reasons.
That technical reason being they're going to resell them at $400, I presume.
Yes, yes. And of course, you know, there are egregious gougers like Star City Games who are charging as of record time $349 for a box of Eternal Masters. Apparently, if you pre-order them by the case, though, it's only about $1,000, $1,100 for an entire case of Eternal Masters. I happen to know a person who has already pre-ordered 6 cases.
Wow.
That's a bunch of cases.
That's a bunch of cases, and he's getting more cases than my local game store, which refused to set a price because he wants to charge as much as is fair, he said.
I know we mentioned it on our anniversary show, but Patriot Games in Leeds, who I have no sponsorship agreement with, but is my LGS, honoring their pre-orders at MSRP because they are decent human beings.
Yep. That's very decent of them. So congratulations, Patriot Games of Leeds. Listeners, if you know of any stores that are not gouging, please sing out to us. Let us know who they are and we'll retweet their name because these are people who need to be supported.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Hypothetical question. You're Mark Rosewater or whoever's responsible for the printing.
All right, hold on.
Sure.
Okay, I'm getting ready.
Hey, Mark, we've done a really super limited print run of Eternal Masters. And we'll put the cleaver away. I'm going to put my fingers in my pockets, Mark, before I ask this question. What do we do considering various power buyers in the community have just bought up all the stock and are charging up to double MSRP on this product?
Well, it is a collectible card game, and part of it being a collectible card game is that it's collectible. Not everybody can get all of the cards.
Okay, but some of the people should be able to get some of the cards, Mark. Who aren't rich finance guys or store owners.
Well, for those people, I suggest that they take part in a lot of drafts.
Mark, I didn't know you were from Long Island.
Oh, it's one of those little secret things.
All right.
Yeah, so...
You haven't violated the color pie, have you?
No, Mark, no. Quick, leave the office, Nate. He's going for the cleaver.
I need my
Put
shark
your
gloves.
Hand in the clamp.
Not the thumb clamps. No, Mark, no! Basically, like, how do you fix this problem? Wizards could reprint a load more. Like, why aren't Wizards, for example, if the secondary market's big problem is you'll devalue our stock and collectors who have got a lot of money invested over many years in their collection, which has a cash value to it, that presumably are going to sell one day, because if they have no intention of selling it, the cash value of it is irrelevant. Right, they're going to say, are you going to devalue our stock? So Wizards, for some reason, have said, okay, we'll honor the value of those cards. That's why we have a reserve list and limited print runs on these things. But then the people who are they're honoring by putting those reserve lists out are devaluing Wizards being kind to them by hoarding it and charging the public vast amounts of cash over MSRP, gouging those prices. And it's not like companies like Star City Games need that money. Like, for God's sake, they're by far the market leaders in the secondary market. Why don't Wizards just print a standard Magic amount of this product, but just not have it allowed in standard? What would that do?
Well, yeah. So you're conflating reserve list with a low print run on Eternal Masters with gouging.
They're all connected.
Well, sort of. Because Modern Masters isn't necessarily connected to the reserve list, but they still only print a limited print run of that, too. And it's much larger than Eternal Masters, but I think they're being conservative for a number of reasons, right? And I don't know if it's true, but what I'm surmising is they're not sure that it will sell, which is patently ridiculous. So, right, now, like, it won't sell. This is madness.
I'm not going to buy a pack that might have a Mana Crypt in it.
No, why would I do that, right? Why would I buy 24 of them? Why would I buy 48 of them or whatever? And so the reserve list is a separate issue because as far as I know, they're not going to violate that, although I certainly hope they do over time because it gives those cards, it gives new players an opportunity to collect those cards. Otherwise, you have a classic problem especially if one looks at this as a game. Games that do what Wizards of the Coast is doing give early winners a snowballing effect where it becomes very difficult to compete with people who have an early win in certain games, right?
Yeah.
And a good game allows for people who have fallen behind to catch up, and what Wizards is doing just flat out is not allowing people to catch up. So if you weren't around in the days of the merely $250 Black Lotuses, frankly, I can remember them being even cheaper than that. I remember an $80 Black Lotus.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I remember when you could pick one up for like £50, which is, yeah, $70, $80. And that was like, oh my God, who would pay that for that? Well, now look.
The really silly thing that I don't understand is why they have restricted the print run to such a small amount. I mean, they're clearly seeding it with EDH cards. They're seeding it with cards that the community is kind of going nuts over. So they had to know this was going to be a popular set. Why they printed it at lower numbers even than Modern Masters, the original Modern Masters set, is completely beyond me. I guess they don't want people to have too many Mana Crypts.
I know. They don't want anyone to have them. In our Patreon group, chat group, people getting really excited about these spoilers and like retweeting and chatting about them, like almost like they were going to have access to these cards. And I was like, you're not going to have access to them any more than you have right this second, with maybe the exception of Mana Crypt, because there are so few of them out there. And, you know, these prices aren't going to go down. They'll go down very briefly. If anything, I predict they'll actually, some of them will go up, especially the ones that are vintage where people want play sets. More people are going to invest in the format and they're going to want four copies of something, some of these cards, which means they're going to become scarcer because the player demand is going to go up, but the supply is only going up not the same. It's going up a much smaller amount. So just why? If someone at Wizards can give me an honest reason that isn't connected to we don't want to hurt people's cash value in the secondary market who have been doing this for a long time, which isn't a good reason in my opinion. And I have a very nice collection of cards for the record before people say, oh, you're just jealous, Sean, because you don't have these cards. I have dual lands. I have all the old stuff that people talk about. It's nonsense. It's utter nonsense. Why is there not more of this product? Oh,
right.
It's creating hype for something that then they're not delivering on. And speaking from someone that used to work for Games Workshop, that had a different policy, because obviously you could buy their product whenever you wanted, but they kept putting the price up. So it went from £20 for 30 guys to £30 for 10 guys, but you still needed the 30 guys to make the unit, and adjusted it that way rather than, oh, we're going to keep releasing little tidbits, but cracking the price up on the boosters and cracking demand up. It killed off that hobby. Games Workshop is nowhere near as strong as it used to be, combined with a few other things like killing their rules. But it drove players away to go play things like Malifaux, X-Wing, all these other alternative games. This is just an insane thing. It's creating hype for Commander and Vintage, I guess, which I don't play, but it's a fine format. And then people are going to try and get into it, be disappointed when they can't get what they want, and turn away. It's... Ugh. Anyway, rant over.
Well, for a brief period, some of these very hard-to-find cards, like Mana Crypt, will be cheaper.
Brief period.
Very brief period. Like, a Mana Crypt was going for 150 a couple of days ago. I'm checking on it now. Oh, that's great.
You can get them for
TCG 80. TCG has service unavailable.
$80 you can pre-order them for, if that pre-order is honored.
In my deck testing, I was actually taking out cards that I didn't have a reasonable expectation of owning. So my recent decks don't have any Mana Crypts in them, or dual lands, for that matter.
Right.
Yep. I apply the same policy when we deck test on Cockatrice. I do not put cards in that I don't own or have no intention of buying because of the cash value. Like, you won't see a moat floating in any of my decks, for example.
What about a sneak attack?
If I play,
you're going to put a sneak attack in?
I mean, I own a sneak attack, so it might go in a deck.
How about an Imperial Seal?
Nope, will never go in a deck.
$900 card, no?
The money. See, why didn't they reprint that? But oh, I suppose we've got Vampiric Tutor, which is effectively the same card. But just the idea's great, Wizards. The execution has been poor, and the people in the selling community that are behaving the way they're behaving, shame on you. You are attacking your own community. It is disgusting. Shame on you.
Yeah. Now, the obvious devil's advocate to this is, well, they're businesses, and it's a limited supply product. Why can't they charge as much as they want, as much as the market will bear? I mean, if Star Cities is charging $350 for a box and people are buying them, who's to blame for that?
Okay. People shouldn't be buying them. If people weren't buying them, that price would come down.
Yeah.
So you're right. Is there right? Freedom. Yep. There's a bald eagle flying on the horizon. It's a capitalistic market. Do what you like. But they can charge what they want. But it's like being a male waiter at Hooters, Phil. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
But I don't think those two are equivalent.
Okay, so, right, okay, I do have a genuine answer to this, right, so what do you value more as a, not Star City Games, right, because they are very comfortable in their setup, or at least the way they portray themselves to be. I don't have access to their books, I have nothing to do with them, but the way they behave and the way they portray themselves, they appear to be a successful business, yeah?
It's fair to say.
Okay, so Star City Games, you're not them in this scenario. You're the guy at the local game store who runs an FNM and sells not just collectible card games, but, you know, miniatures games, roleplay games, the whole shebang. What's more valuable to you, Phil? Is it making a quick buck, or is it fostering a valued customer base that doesn't just cater to the rich elite who have got X amount of thousands of dollars disposable income?
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, of course you create the stable customer base, but they have a stable customer base, right?
Star City Games do. Not a lot of LGSs do.
Yeah, but again, we're talking about Star City Games.
No,
Star
I, said, City Games sponsors. I said specifically in this scenario, we're not talking about Star City Games.
Oh, okay, so it's a totally different scenario.
Yeah, so I'm saying that Star City Games, I agree, have no reason not to charge through the nose for that. You ask me, why would anyone not do that? Not why would Star City Games? So I'm saying, right, I agree with you. Star City Games can do what they like because they've created almost a monopoly on how they work, because they have the buying power to say, Snapcaster Mage, we're going to buy every copy of Snapcaster Mage from every online seller and every indie trader we can find, and then charge what we like for it. And if no one pays for it, then no one gets Snapcaster Mage. Right, so they're a different thing. Your LGSs that are now cancelling your order, Phil, because they want to.
Well, we don't know who. I don't know who that guy was. I ordered that off of a seller on Amazon.
Okay.
My local game store that I walked into, he wouldn't set a price. He wouldn't pre-sell
Perfect.
It.
Example.
He's quote unquote only getting 18 boxes, right? And he wanted to set a price that he said was he wanted the most he could get. That, as he amended, was fair.
Okay, so there's another, let's imagine there's another LGS down the road that have set a price. They're going to set it at, say, $20 over MSRP, or $50 over MSRP, because they want to make a little bit more money to keep their doors open, and they honor their pre-order to you and say, yep, it's going to be this much. We'll put your name down, Phil. We'll guarantee you maybe only one box, but we'll guarantee you can get some of this product at a reasonable price. I come to LA and I say, Phil, where can I go to buy cards? Which one of those two stores are you advising to me?
I would probably advise the one that set a price ahead of time, as opposed to leaving it variable.
You're never going to be able to compete with Star City Games on prices, etc. So what you're doing is you're fostering a loyal customer base, which is vastly more valuable than making a few extra $100 on a limited print run that you're not going to be able to restock. So these people are undercutting their customer base to make a quick buck now. It's like the old psychological experiment where you put a marshmallow in front of a child and say, that's your marshmallow, but if you can sit in this room for 10 minutes and don't eat that marshmallow, you'll have two in 10 minutes. 75% of the children will eat the marshmallow, but the 25% of the smart children will leave it alone and get two marshmallows in 10 minutes because they can see further on their brain is better developed. It just disgusts me what people are doing. And I agree with you from before. If your LGS is doing decent, reasonable behavior around Eternal Masters, let us know and we will promote them out there. Send them a tweet out. We will mention them. Ugh. Anyway.
So last week we also touched on four color commanders because Commander 2016 features four color commanders for the first time. And as we are probably all familiar, the community tends to want to use the Nephilim as four color commanders, even though they're not legendary. And so Wizards of the Coast is answering that demand by making the whole set five different four colors, and presumably we'll get at least one legendary creature. I guess the question is, will we see any of the older mechanics returning for this? Will we see some brand new? Obviously, we will see some brand new mechanics. What do we think about that?
I'm hoping that they'll use experience counters again, because then in each of the deck, you can. It doesn't matter which commander makes the counters, so if you have your commander, four colors, making experience counters. You can also include three of the last year's product in each of the same deck. So like if you have a non-red deck, you can include Daxos and Marin and Azuri, and they're all making counters and using them.
That would be interesting. I'd be surprised if they did it.
Yeah.
But it would be certainly interesting.
I think the Nephilim recently spiked after that announcement, and if you're running a five-color commander, then you'll have five more options.
Yes, you will.
Yeah, it's true.
I personally think they will use hybrid mana a lot, which will give you sort of multi-toolbox-style commanders. So, you know, you've got your four colors on there, but because of hybrid mana, you actually can run it in a two- or three-color deck. It doesn't have to be a four-color deck.
Right, like the commander costs three different colors of mana to use, but then maybe his or her abilities cost a hybrid mana of one of the other colors.
Yeah, yeah. So let's say the one that's in the Shaun Paradise color pairing that is doesn't have green will be black-blue hybrid, two black-blue hybrid in its casting cost, and its activated ability will be a red-white hybrid.
Yep, that's weird.
It's weird, but it is a way of making, because the question has been, I think, how do you, in a pre-packaged product, how do you put a solid mana base in? And there's a way to be able to cast your commander and use your commander without having to flood the deck with guild gates and refuges.
Right. Well, touching on that, in all of my decks, ever since they changed from Partial Paris to the Vancouver Mulligan, I've added my land count. I've increased my land count in all of my decks since then. So yeah. As a rule of thumb, like take the number of colors in your commander, subtract one, and add that many lands to your deck.
Ooh, good rule. I like the math there. I was simpler. I just added two lands to every deck.
Yeah, the monocolored commanders don't really need that much of a boost still, unless they're a very high-cost monocolored commander.
Yeah, the only monocolored commander I'm using at the moment is Shaeldred, and she's a 7, so I think it still needed it.
Nate, what's that formula again, just for the people who were caught unaware the first time?
Oh, start with 36 lands, then count the number of colors in your commander's identity, and subtract 1, and add that many lands.
Hmm. Well, there you go.
All right, that's pretty cool.
So I have 40 lands in my 5-color decks.
So you were only running 36 lands before the Vancouver switch?
Yeah.
Hmm. I tended to run more lands whenever I'd run more colors in the commander anyway. Hmm.
Yeah, but with a lot of the 3-color commanders, the strategy was with Partial Paris to just mulligan away everything that's not a land in your commander's colors so you can cast it early.
Right.
And now you can't do that.
Or at least have access to it so that when you get your accelerants, you can use a soul ring and not have to worry about having the color base.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try that, Nate. I don't know what cards I'll pull from the Mimeoplasm. And Marath seems to be working pretty well. So I don't know if I'll touch Perfection. Yeah, I'm looking. Ink Treader Nephilim went up like a quarter, 25 cents. So it went up a gumball from 3 or 4 gumballs.
That's actually one of the more fun ones. That and Dune Brood.
Hmm. Okay, we can go down that rabbit hole quite a bit. That's a very good point. If they use the experience counters, or even, frankly, if we want to use the experience counters, then we can, in the non-red, you supposed, put Daxos, Marin, and Azuri. That's kind of cool. Possibilities there.
Do you know, even if they don't use experience counters, you can put them in anyway, and I actually think it would be quite good.
What do you mean? Like, you can put those commanders in even without experience counters?
Put the commanders into the 99, and yeah. It doesn't matter whether your commander's getting it. I think you're going to rack up enough experience counters fast enough that they could still be effective.
Yeah.
Or they're a removal magnet.
Yep. Which is it has its own value. So
maybe an episode in the future, we'll talk about brewing with multiple experience counter-generating legendary creatures, because, of course, they wouldn't be the commander, would they?
No. Well, one might be, but then... actually, no, it wouldn't be, because then you wouldn't have access to the other guys, would you?
Right.
And that concludes the news. Should we do something we've not done for a while?
Yes. We have not done this for a while, at least not altogether.
Yeah.
This week, we have a special segment wherein we talk about cards that warp the meta and maybe pull your attention in such a way that you need to remove them, copy them, steal them... And we call this segment The Watch List.
Da, da, da.
The Watch List.
The Watch List.
Now, you may have heard over the last several episodes, you may have heard us referencing one of Nate's decks. And every time we reference it, he redacts it like this.
I'm going to miss that.
But redact it no longer.
Yes. And so, Nate, you should be the first one to talk about this card.
Okay, so I'm brewing my Ashling the Pilgrim deck, and I'm using a lot of the cards that we're going to talk about later in the color-specific land destruction categories. Mm-hmm. So I had islands covered, I had plains covered, and I was thinking, how do I take care of swamps? So I was looking around, and I found... The Cormis Bell. It's an artifact. It costs 4. Treat all swamps in play as 1/1 creatures. And then, looking further, I found another card, Living Plain. 2 green-green. Treat all lands in play as both lands and 1/1 creatures.
That has the added bonus of giving lands summoning sickness.
When they're put into play, yeah.
Yeah, but it specifically says in the cards they cannot be tapped for mana on the first turn they're brought into play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. These are old cards that we're looking at, so the Oracle text is going to be different. Cormis Bell is much simpler. All swamps are 1/1 black creatures that are still lands.
Mm.
And Living Plain is also much simpler. All lands are 1/1 creatures that are still lands. So, if you have Urborg Tomb of Yawgmoth, that completes the Cormis Bell combo piece that Living Plain offers just by itself. Now, I built a 5-color deck around this concept, and I don't play it often. It's more of a demonstration deck. It's not a deck that you play when you want to have fun. It's just to show a concept. The thing is, if all lands are 1/1 creatures, then what if I play an Elish Norn? And all of my opponent's creatures get -2/-2. Then I have lands and no one else does. How about Massacre Worm? How about Orzhov Pontiff? Doomwake Giant? All of these creatures give a -/- to all your opponent's creatures. And in the spells category, there's Electricery, which you can overload for just one in a red, and that does the same effect. 1/1 to all your opponent's creatures. Festering March is a spell in black with suspend 3, so it happens every 3 turns. So there are also spells that destroy all your opponent's creatures, like Plague Wind and In Garrick's Wake, and you still have your land creatures, and they don't. Or maybe you just want to get rid of all the lands. You make a board wipe, like Phyrexian Rebirth, that counts up all the creatures destroyed and gives you an XX. And then you can literally kill Phil with the embodiment of Phyrexia.
That's what it boils down to. Can we kill Phil with this combo?
Or if you're in red and white, which we're going to talk about those colors a lot later, any regular board wipe and giving yourself indestructible at the same time kills all their creatures, doesn't kill yours. You have Avacyn, you have the other Avacyn, you have Boros Charm.
There is a third Avacyn, but she's banished to the rubbish corner.
Yeah, she doesn't count.
You know the quadrant theory, yeah? Cards good at the beginning, early stage, when you're on parity, when you're behind, late stage of the game. We should add a fifth part to the quadrant theory. Can it kill Phil?
That's a big quadrant.
I'm starting to get uncomfortable. I think we need to sit down and talk about our feelings.
Oh, that is an appropriate response from a Selesnya player.
Yes. Let's all talk and work this out and find out what our differences are and then maybe patch them over with a good game of Karametra and Tantris.
Dropping the Cormus Bell and killing someone, either all their stuff, or just killing them by attacking with all your lands. It's an amusing combo. The real question, though, is it ban-worthy?
Well, I think it's the kind of card... I don't believe it's ban-worthy. I think it's this kind of card that when Cormus Bell comes out, you better act before Nate can trick you into killing all of your lands. Or just outright kill all your lands.
Yeah, these cards mean trouble's coming.
Yep.
Yep. When you see either one of them, it's time to get your instant speed removal out.
Oh, do you know, I just thought of a hilarious combo with these, Nate. Goblin Sharpshooter. It's one thing to animate all your opponent's lands, another thing to machine gun them with a 1/1 goblin.
There you go.
You can play any of about 1,000 different scenes from different movies as well, where the land is just being shot up by machine guns as that happens.
Hey, now you've thought of an abusive way of using Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth. Can I let you in on a little combo I've been doing in some of my Azorius and Esper decks? So you drop the Urborg when it's late game. Well, you can drop it early game if you want, but when it gets to late game, if you drop Karma onto the table and let everyone's upkeep step kill them, that's quite funny. Karma, if you don't know, is 2/2 white for an enchantment. Karma deals 1 damage to a player for each swamp they control during their upkeep step. Here's Urborg. How many lands you got out? 15, have you? Oh, have you got 27, have you, Mr. Green player? Yeah, there's Karma. You die. You die. You die. Hey, it's now my upkeep and I'm the only player left. Woohoo!
Wow. So that's another way to weaponize Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be careful.
And it actually doesn't matter whose Urborg
it doesn't.
Any player can have it out. And we see it in a lot of decks.
I run it in almost every deck, even decks that just run black. There's ways of abusing it. Filth is the good one. Gives all your creatures swamp walk.
Yeah, swamp walking creatures. Yay. Well, Nate, you've managed to turn an innocent, innocent card from the dawn of Magic's time into a horrible weapon of tragedy and pain.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Nate.
Yeah, I kind of regret this one, though. This Cormus Bell's going to be trouble.
It's definitely not, definitely not ban-worthy, but it is freaking hilarious.
Yeah, and it is going to be trouble. Guaranteed. Wow. Well, that's our watch list for the show.
Whoa.
Are we ready to go on to our main topic, which, of course, has nothing to do with Cormus Bell? Our main topic being mass land destruction in EDH. You know, the cards that people will play and it grinds the game to a halt because no one suddenly has a mana base to speak of. That's when it's played poorly. When it's played well, of course, the person who plays it has plenty of mana generators that just don't happen to be lands.
There's other ways of abusing it, but yeah, that's...
Oh, indeed, indeed. So, why don't you guys take on the main offenders here?
Okay, so this is just going to be a list of cards that you're going to see. So, when we're discussing how to use or how not to use Mass Land Destruction, we don't have to keep referencing back to cards. I'll do the white ones, say. In white, you have the classic Armageddon, 3 and a white for a sorcery, destroy all lands. Simple, clean, pure. There was a functional reprint of it in Portal 3 Kingdoms. If you want to pay hundreds of dollars for a card, you can get for pennies, which is called Ravages of War, 3 and a white, destroy all lands, sorcery speed. The other big classic in white, I guess, is Cataclysm, which is 2 and 2 white. Each player chooses from amongst the permanents they control an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, a land, and then sacrifices the rest. So that one gets past indestructibility. Is why you might use it.
Oh, wow. You can use that early game and really tilt things.
Oh, God, can you? Yeah, that one's a brutal one. Now, you might think it's worse because it gives your opponent some control over what they keep. They get to keep something. But trust me, when it gets resolved against you, you won't think, well, at least it wasn't Armageddon. Yeah, you'll be angrier because everything's gone bar one of one Billy Nomate's version of each card type.
Yeah, but if somebody has three lands and nothing else, then they go down to one card. Whereas if you have a soul ring, a creature, and some lands, then you get to keep three of those.
So that's the white ones. Does one of you guys want to take the mono reds?
All right. Obliterate, sorcery. 6, red. It can't be countered. Destroy all artifacts, creatures, and lands. They can't be regenerated. A simpler version, Yokel Hops, 4 red. Sorcery, bury all artifacts, creatures, and lands. Decree of Annihilation, 8 red. That's expensive. Exile all artifacts, creatures, and lands from the battlefield, all cards from all graveyards, and all cards from all hands. So, well, let's start over.
We do not like that one.
You can cycle this card for only 5 in red. You discard this card, you draw a card, and it has this effect, destroy all lands. Devastation, 5 red. Destroy all creatures and lands. Impending Disaster, 1 and a red enchantment. During your upkeep, if there are 7 or more lands in play, sacrifice Impending Disaster and destroy all lands.
You are kidding me.
One of my favorites from back in the day. So that's one where if you get an early board stay, like in a Gruul deck, you drop that. And everyone's just like, oh, do I want to keep my land? I've got 3 land out. He's got, what? So yeah, essentially it's you get a cycle to return, to react to it. But you know, there you go.
But if you have a strong lead in mana rocks on the table, then there you go.
Grand. Phil, would you like to do the Boros ones?
Sure. First one is Razia's Purification, 4, a red and a white, 6 converted mana cost total. We get a sorcery. Each player chooses 3 permanents he or she controls, then sacrifices the rest. Well, at least it wasn't an Armageddon. A Johnny Vengeant, 2 and a red and a white, 4 converted mana cost total. We get a Planeswalker, a Johnny. It has a bunch of stuff, but the one that's relevant here is -7, destroy all lands target player controls.
Mwah, mwah. Target player, so one of you doesn't get to play Magic.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry about that, but you can't play.
Good in a Naya deck. People aren't drunk enough, so I just need to say, Ajani Vengeant, good in a Naya deck with Doubling Season.
Right, because then it's only 2 steps away, 2 turns away, and if you can protect your Ajani Vengeant, then it will happen.
Yep.
Hmm. Oh, Nate, you should read these. These are among your favorite cards.
These are Nate cards.
Yeah, so this next category I'm willing to use in my monocolor decks, like Ashling the Pilgrim. Color and type specific. Boil, 3 in a red, instant, destroy all islands. Boiling Seas, 3 in a red, sorcery, destroy all islands.
Familiar.
Tsunami, 3 in a green, destroy all islands. Acid Rain, 3 in a blue, destroy all forests.
Ooh, tricky.
Flash Fires, 3 in a red, sorcery, destroy all plains. Wake of Destruction, 3 red, sorcery, destroy target land and all lands with the same name as that land.
Ooh.
Yeah, if someone's played an Urborg, that's a second destroyal.
Ruination, 3 in a red, sorcery, destroy all non-basic lands. If you're playing a mono-red deck, hey, there you go. Wave of Vitriol, 5 green, sorcery. Each player sacrifices all artifacts, enchantments, and non-basic lands he or she controls. Now, for each land sacrificed this way, its controller may search his or her library for a basic land card and put it onto the battlefield tapped. I hope you run a lot of basic lands. Then each player who searched his library this way shuffles
it. That's a big middle finger to five-color decks, really. And a lot of three-color decks as well run very few basics.
Yeah.
Yep.
And interestingly, that card was printed in the Commander 2014 sets,
yep,
which were all mono-colored decks, which don't run a lot of non-basics outside of utility lands. So a very odd place for it to be printed. But...
Well, it's a pretty safe place.
Vicious card.
Yeah, it was a safe place to play it, but it made it out of that particular cage.
I run it in Jared, where I can recur my own lands quite nicely. And I want stuff in my graveyard.
Yeah, I have it in Gitrog, I think.
Yeah, nice. Probably going to Titania deck as well, I'm guessing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that covers... I mean, I'm sure there are some mass land cards we've missed. Feel free to tweet us any glaring omissions. I think there's probably 5 or 6 we've missed, but they're the ones that you see the most, we think, other than the portal ones, but they're just an interesting side note. What commanders do you use if you're going to feature mass land destruction as a key to your deck? One springs to mind, and here she is right at the top of the list. Who wants to talk about this annoying person? Khan's best mate, Joyra of the Gitu. She's 1 a red and a blue for a 2/2 legendary creature human wizard. Pay 2 mana, exile a non-land card from your hand, put 4 time counters on the exiled card. If it doesn't have suspend, it gains suspend. So what suspend means is at the beginning of your upkeep, remove a time counter from that card. When the last card last is removed, cast it without paying its mana cost, and if it is a creature, it gains haste. So what you do with her is, it's early game because she's super cheap and you've got some mana out. You cast her, you don't even need to tap her to use her ability. You suspend, I don't know, Ulamog is the one I normally see. Any giant Eldrazi or beat-faced creature, but the Ulamog got indestructible, so it's very popular. And you also suspend an Obliterate or Wake of Destruction, Decree of Annihilation, any of those big red destruction spells. And then you suspend them at the same time. Now, if both of them would be cast in the same turn, you as the controlling active player get to choose what order those spells are resolved in. So you cast the Obliterate, destroy all creatures and lands, then cast your Ulamog and have an Annihilator 4 indestructible creature on the table and say, good game, guys, good game.
Joyra is so much fun.
It's why I built the first iteration I had of my Eldrazi deck was a Joyra deck, and it ran no mass land destruction, and it suffers from what Jason Ault calls the Rafik problem, which is, doesn't matter what you do or who you play with or how many times they've played against her, they hate her off the table because they just... don't believe that you're not going to wipe the lands when you want.
That's right. But you are going to wipe the lands, so...
But Phil...
They're
but
right.
Phil, I'm not. Phil, you've played against this deck. All it does is suspend a load of derpy Eldrazi. See how they didn't believe me, listeners? You could hear it in that pregnant pause. They just, yeah. We're not playing Magic right now, and they still didn't believe me.
Yeah, you know what? We'll kill you, and then we'll take a look at your deck.
And they go, huh, he didn't have any mass land destruction.
Oh. Hey, he was right.
Go make us a cup of tea while we finish playing Magic.
Yeah, I use Joyra as a backup in my Yaleva deck because I'm not running mass land destruction. I am running some, but not a lot. I just have her because I'm going to have a handful of 9-mana black spells.
It's true. It's true.
So how do you respond to Joyra?
With a Swords to Plowshare.
To the face, over and over again.
To the face. Zap.
Yeah, and if you see an Ulamog and a Yokel Hops counting down at the same time, then the best case responses are have a counterspell and wait for it to resolve and then hit it.
Yeah.
Or keep a Plains plus a Path to Exile or a Swords to Plowshares in your hand. And be ready.
Yeah, she'll warp your meta. She's the
but she gives them haste.
Yeah.
So I mean, you basically have to tap out when the Joyra player destroys your lands. You have to tap out, and then use instant speed removal on whatever has just come into play.
Yeah, or counter the mass land destruction spell. That's the best course. Is hold counters. For destroying the mass land destruction. Because it's worse than other MLD commanders, because you can see the bugger coming. Ugh.
Dun dun.
Wouldn't you want to counter the Ulamog?
Dun 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 dun.
No, because
dun,
the Ulamog comes in after the mass land destruction.
Right, but you tap out.
You can deal with an Ulamog.
Yeah, easier than MLD, that's true.
Yeah, an MLD says the game is over, or the game is grinding on for an extra hour. The Ulamog says there's an Ulamog on the table. That's very powerful, but it's not dealable with. Does that make sense? It's
yeah, but the game probably isn't going to last for an hour if nobody can respond to Ulamog.
Exactly.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. You let the it's better in terms of survival if you cancel the if you counter the Ulamog as opposed to the mass land destruction. Sure, everybody's reset and sure everybody's dragging their feet at that point, but there's no Ulamog on the table.
Oh, I think I disagree with you on that one. I'd rather deal with an Ulamog with land than deal with nobody having any land and there not being an Ulamog.
After you've drawn the attention of the Joyra player by trying to cancel the mass land destruction.
Doesn't matter. Everyone else should be thanking you. That's why Obliterate's really good, because it can't be countered, by the way. That's why that's the go-to card in Joyra.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And the Joyra player can set up so much faster than you, because they only need however much it costs to recast Joyra, let's say you do counter the Ulamog and let all the land die, they need so much less mana to get going because they can start suspending things quicker and quicker and quicker. And if they've built their deck properly, they've got mana rocks in their deck and probably have some in play.
Yeah, it's brutal. There's no doubt.
Anyway, move on to the next one, who's a much nicer commander. So someone else take this guy.
So what's another commander, Nate, that you would use?
Numot, the Devastator. 3 red, white, blue,
just
legendary creature dragon, 6/6, flying. Whenever Numot the Devastator deals combat damage to a player, you may pay 2 and red. If you do, destroy up to 2 target lands. So it's kind of obvious what this guy's going to try to do.
It didn't take very many years for Jeskai to change from, well, Numot to, let's think about things and use a lot of karate.
Numot is very much embracing the red side of his casting cost, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He's like, yeah, I tried that white and blue stuff, but I'm a dragon, and so I'm going to blow up some lands now.
So, yeah, you use this guy to commander damage the person who hasn't got any flyers off the table whilst destroying the resources of the other players.
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. Hey, I'm coming over to you. But you're just going to take 6 points of damage. Nate's lands are blowing up.
Yeah, because...
Quit it.
You don't have to destroy the lands of the defending player.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Just target them.
Quit it.
This guy's okay. Like, He's going to be... He's one of the go-to Jeskai good stuff commanders, isn't he?
Well, yeah.
Because if you did,
he's got some pretty good stuff
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but if you don't if you don't want to play Narset or Shuyun to do that kind of shenanigans, and you don't want to play Ruan of the Fomori because he's too random for you, Numot's kind of one of your only options left.
And not too bad. It's easy to give him enough evasion so that he can get past whatever flying blockers. So if your opponent has a, let's just hypothetically say, a Bitter Blossom and is chumping your Numot with 1-1 fairies, you just give him Trample in some way or non-basic land walk, let's say.
Yeah, Trailblazer's Boots, good card. He's kind of the nice version of Mass Land Destruction, isn't he? Because he kind of targeted land destruction.
Well, you give him Double Strike.
Yeah. And
Double Strike, he does that 2 times a turn.
It's a little bit mana intensive, but you can use him a bit politically and say, right, guys, let this attack get through and I'll destroy that Rogue's Passage that Grimgrin over there has got, and I'll destroy that.
Yeah.
Take your pick. Skarg Rage Pits that the Xenagus player has got.
Cabal Coffers.
Yep.
Cabal Coffers.
All for the low, low price of 6 commander damage.
I'll destroy that Urborg that Nate has.
Oh, yeah. If there's a Cormus Bell out, you got to do something.
Yep.
Yeah.
So these next two commanders are the Big Angels, right? And they're classics that we all know and love. Gisela, Blade of Gold Knight, 4 red, white, white. So 7 converted mana cost. Legendary Angel, 5/5, flying first strike. If a source would deal damage to an opponent or permanent an opponent controls, that source deals double that damage. And if a source would deal damage to you or a permanent you control, prevent half that damage. So basically, then Aurelia the War Leader for 2 red, red, white, white, 6 converted mana cost. You get a 3/4 flying vigilance haste. And whenever she attacks for the first time each turn, you untap all creatures you control. And after this phase, there is an additional combat phase. So she works really well. They both work really well with Numot. And again, you're just basically taking a Boros commander because you want to destroy lots of land.
Yeah, so these are the two most common ones I've fought against, even more than Joyra. So you play Gisela or Aurelia plus some angels and you wipe all the land and go, I'm way ahead on command, on not even just commander damage, I'm just way ahead of big flying beaters. I'm going to win.
Yep.
Sorry. Just boring just thinking about it. Like one of the Boros Mass Land Destruction card is named after one of the Boros angels, Razia's Purification.
So, Nate, you use Mass Land Destruction in Ashling the Pilgrim?
I use the specific color Mass Land Destruction, like Flash Fires and Boil. I stay away from the big destroy everything spells.
Oh, okay.
I've seen people run Ashling with, like, Ashling 95 mountains plus, like, you know, a few red sweepers of land. Land sweepers, should I say. Because you're going to be drawing so much land, you can stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you have 30 mountains in your deck, then it's okay to play Ruination.
Oh, yes.
What if you have 69 lands, which is more like 65 mountains? Is that okay?
Yep.
Yeah.
Good.
If you have plenty of basic lands, then Ruination is just fine. Just keep it fair.
Yep. Keeping it fair.
Yep. Punish the people who dare play more than one color.
So now we were all giggling and we're all laughing as we talk about this and kind of imagining ourselves doing it, especially if our commander is Joyra, right? But why is it so bad? Why do people complain about it? You especially there, Watson.
So the main complaint for this is, I think, the big brother of the complaint people don't like about lots of tutors, which is it leads to very boring games. I mass land wipe. Can you kill me? No, I can't. Do you have mana rocks? I've only got this Boros signet that I now can't tap because I've got no land. What are we doing then?
Yeah, it brings the game from an interesting board state, perhaps, to a screeching halt.
Yeah, but we got to turn 4, guys. It's turn four. What else do I do?
And it's going to last until turn 15 as we get plinked.
Do you know what? It's just... Right, so let's look at the main bullet points in these. So, of why it's a problem.
I've got my Zergo Bell Striker out.
Oh, do you know what we forgot on the commanders? A very classic mass land destructor is Zergo Helm Smasher, and you strap World Slayer to him that destroys all permanents other than World Slayer, and Zergo is indestructible. So you put Zergo out, you attack with him, destroy all permanents. I've got Zergo, I win. But that one's not so bad, because it doesn't really lead to the boring game, because you win. You go, I've got like a 9-9 commander damage guy there. I'm going to deal 9 damage to you each turn. I reckon I can race you. I win. So everyone shuffles up and plays again. But it's when someone resolves it and they've got nothing to win with. Ugh.
Well, what if it's Bell Striker? I mean, I have a 2-2 out now.
Plink, plink, plink.
Armageddon, plink, and then Mountain, plink, Zergo. Plink. Go.
It's worse than stacks, because at least when someone's playing stacks, which if you don't know the terminology means smokestack, which means people don't get to cast spells or untap their lands, because at least you can try and find something to resolve. If you've got no land, your options are the Five Pacts and Force of Will. That's it.
Well, maybe somebody's holding a Simeon Shaman or an Elvish Spirit Guide. That's it. Simeon Spirit Guide and Elvish Spirit Guide. So you can exile those cards and get a green or a red mana.
Oh, the white cards are super cheap to resolve as well. So,
yeah.
So one thing we don't like on this podcast is two-card infinite combos that just win you the game. And a lot of these cards, with their respective commander, feel like, oh, you've cast Gisela, have you, who is your commander? Oh, you've destroyed all the land. You win, do you? Great. Well, well done. Did you spend all months writing a thesis on how to do that? There's just no skill. There's no
joy. You got to time that mass land destruction.
Time it when the blue player's tapped down or has no cards in his hand, which doesn't happen very often on the second part, but you know what I mean. So, right, okay, we've drummed home the point this is boring. Nate, do you have any strong opinion on the boring factor?
Yeah, I stopped playing my five-color deck. I only bring it out when people want to see this particular menace.
One of the things it's bad, there is another thing, which is, I wasn't moving on to this next point here. The way to deal with it, if it's really bad, is to go super heavy counter spells in your deck, which can make the game no fun in a totally different way. If everyone's cramming blue into their colors decks and running counter spell after counter spell, that can change the way your games run and it becomes pervasive. It spreads like a tumor through your group, and everyone stops having as much fun playing Magic, in my opinion. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, we can make this whole episode the watch list.
Yeah, so let's hear an alternative. I can actually hear people across the internet going, I love mass land destruction. It's how I win 2/3 of my games. Our meta runs it all the time. We have no problems in it at all. This is how we like to do Magic. So why is it a good thing? Someone else is going to have to take a lead on this being a good thing, because I don't know if I can stomach it.
Well, as we said, it can end games quickly if it's used responsibly. So you get a beater out and you then destroy everybody's land and ask what's up. The classic example there is Joyra. We were talking that unto death. And really, you've got to win in, what do you guys think? How many turns for your MLD to be actually worthwhile?
3.
Without being impolite. 3 turns. So you win within 3 turns. So in that case of Zergo and World Slayer, it's actually 3 turns per surviving player, assuming no previous Zergo damage. And so you guys are okay with that?
I don't know if I'm okay with it. But
at least if it happens, it's somewhat acceptable.
Surely it's more realistic that you, Zergo player, drops the Zergo, the World Slayer attacks, activates it, and just says, do we all agree I win? So it's zero turns, ultimately.
That's true.
Well, maybe you're the type of player who just doesn't concede on principle, and you're going to play out whatever is going
to
happen.
I was about to say, listener Pete, who plays in my paper meta, would turn around and say, oh, let's see how this resolves. And everyone else just goes, oh, for bleep's sake. Fine. There is...
Ugh. Yep. Never give up. Never surrender. Although, after a Zergo World Slayer hit, I'd probably just give up. Unless I'm the Zergo driver. And then, which of you had this, how to address a surplus of friends?
I wrote it, but I think it's a universal theme. So yeah, if you have too many friends in your paper group and you really want to cut down the numbers, perhaps you haven't got enough chairs in your house and the table's not big enough to get those players on, start running MLD and you'll get rid of that problem super fast.
Yeah, everybody came to play Magic, but if they don't have any lands, then they can't play Magic. So what's the point of coming over if you're going to blow up all my lands?
So I guess what we're saying is don't use mass land destruction irresponsibly. So when it gets to turn 4, do not auto-cast the Armageddon. What if it's turn 6 and you draw Armageddon and you have 6 lands in play? Do you do it?
Depends. If resolving Armageddon is going to realistically say, I win the game, let's shuffle up. So how does your meta deal with this? Because I know it's happened in my meta, both online and paper. There'll be one guy that says, hey, what about mass land destruction? Or in one case in mind, just turned up with a deck. How do you deal with it?
Well, the first time it's a surprise, and so you just sort of have to roll with it. The second time, you kill that player first.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the green approach to it. You turn them into prey and you eat them.
You bring out your good deck.
Yep.
We've all caught
one of those. And
you
punish them. And you know, it's all right. Truthfully, mass land destruction is a strategy. The problem is when people don't use it as part of a strategy. And so if you see somebody in your meta just start dropping Armageddons because it's turn 4, you really should take them aside and say, look, what you're doing isn't fun for anybody. I don't imagine you're having any fun after that first initial rush of, oh my God, everything blew up. So how do you win with mass land destruction? And talk to them about that and see if they can convert it. Because frankly, if you can win a game with it, it's a spectacular way to win a game.
I'm not sure it is.
I mean, think about it. Destroy all of the lands. Boom. Everything's gone. And then you push your way into victory. And as long as you're not doing it 2 points a turn, that's pretty
good.
There's
the other bit, the amount of turns it will realistically take you to win, because that figurative guy that Nate mentioned who's going to say, yeah, no, I'm not conceding, they exist all over the place. And they have a right to not concede a game of Magic. That's not a problem.
That's right. Yeah. You know what? You're going to slow the game down for everybody? Guess what? You're in this game too. I'm not surrendering. You have to live with it now.
And you know, if the...
Well, what if I ring the Cormis bell and destroy everyone's lands but mine? Is that okay
to
scoop?
You've got 20 lands, and yeah, that's fine, but there's going to be a guy that's not going to scoop, and he...
I'm looking at Cormis bell right now. It's under a gum wall.
Yeah, it's an amazing card for that price.
So I would suggest if you're going to run a mass land destruction strategy, make sure you have several decks and it's only one of them. And perhaps if you're going to get it out, you say to people, I'm going to do my mass land destruction Gisela deck now, or my mass land destruction Joyra. So everyone knows it's coming. Everyone can reach for their decks that have a chance of responding to it. Like, for a long time in our meta, there wasn't a lot of counterspell in anyone's decks. And we wouldn't have been able to...
Robin changed that.
On our online meta, yeah. In our paper meta, counterspell came in as a response to various other things.
Yeah.
But
that you did.
So, no, it wasn't me. It wasn't me at all. So someone in our paper meta said, I don't see why I shouldn't be able to use mass land destruction. They played a lot of red. They said, you use Tutor, Sean. And you always say, well, it's one of black's powerhouses. And to remove that from black is to remove an important part of the color. So removing mass land destruction from red is removing an important aspect of the color, which is a very well-constructed and fair point. So I said, sure, do you know what? I've got my Olivia Voldaren deck with me. Just give me 2 minutes. I have my sort of trade binder with me, or one of my trade binders, my red binder. Give me 2 minutes. I cut a load of chaff out of the Olivia deck and put a load of mass land destruction in. And just played Olivia. She had some counters on her, wiped the land, and went, everyone just went, oh, I scooped then. And I was like, this is why we don't do it. Because none of you are running counter spells. No one plays with heavy counter magic, which basically just means every deck I have that has white and red in it and can play a powerful commander, as far as power and toughness goes, just wins. None of you can respond to it. So after that, I took it out immediately and they all agreed, okay, we're not going to use mass land destruction. Pinpoint land destruction, absolutely fine. Go kill those annoying utility lands.
Yeah, like forests.
They are. Well, I agree with you there, Nate. They are annoying. And yeah, but then a few months later, someone playing their Boros Angels deck dropped Razia's Purification and wiped out when they had Aurelia out and just went, I'm going to win. And we were like, okay, we're not doing that. And then what happened was more and more people started running counter and more people started beating that person as soon as they had their angel deck out. Just said, right, you don't get to play. Everyone kill him because we want to play magic.
Yeah.
But then that...
And that's a healthy...
Yeah, but then it comes down to the person playing with that angel deck's response, isn't it? If their response is, all right, guys, yeah, that's fair, that's fine. But if that person's response is to have a bit of a sulk and say, oh, you're all picking on me all the time, which is what happened.
Oh, no, it should be an ebb and flow. Any meta is going to have an ebb and flow where one particular strategy starts to come to the fore and then everybody begins running counter strategies, right? And so your deck is constantly evolving in a nice and healthy meta. In a meta where you either don't see each other very frequently or whatever, the decks tend to remain static. And the or whatever is, or they're just not learning, you know, the lesson, the decks tend to remain static. It's that ebb and flow that really makes it fun to play Magic with the same people over and over. Because then, if they start running lots of counter spells, then maybe there's a lot of control at that point. And you can switch to a strategy that takes advantage of their having counter spells, which I know sounds kind of ridiculous, but there it is, right? Something where all of the spells are suddenly all about even levels of power, and so no individual spell being countered matters. And that's a good thing for a meta, pouting or no pouting.
I just run Blue Hate.
Yeah, you just run Blue Hate.
Mm.
So what we're talking about is if it's happening in your meta that somebody is playing mass land destruction, you talk to them about it. If they're not running a strategy and just running Armageddon because it's a really cool card to play on turn four, definitely bring them aside and talk to them about that. Maybe only run it occasionally. If you have to do some land destruction, you put it in one or two decks, and even then you don't even cast it all the time. Right. And if you do run MLD, then you make sure you ask around and let people know, oh, by the way, I'm running some MLD in here. Is this okay?
I think that's extra important in a pickup game at your LGS.
Yeah. You don't want to show up at an LGS and just go like, Armageddon.
Yeah.
That tends to make no friends.
You pick up, stick out Joyra. You're not only suspending your Obliterate, you're also suspending your right to play games with those people anymore.
All right, so it's almost the end of the show, isn't it? We've covered MLD quite a bit. Nate, this is typically where you pull out some card that I would hate, but in this case, it's a card that we're all going to like.
Yeah, Sacred Ground, one and a white, enchantment. Whenever a spell or ability an opponent controls, an important point there, whenever a spell or ability an opponent controls causes a land to be put into your graveyard from play, return that land to play.
If that was a spell or ability that anyone could control, that would be a card that has abused potential.
Oh, yeah.
Really badly.
So it's a defensive card. It's not going to crush your opponents, but it'll let you recover if they're running mass land destruction. Or targeted land
for
destruction.
That matter. Yeah, it's really good. It's like a Crucible of Worlds on super, like, mega speed. It's, yeah, for everybody. It's pumped up to the nines. It's got Roid Rage.
You know, it's funny. I've actually been thinking about running a Abzan version of the Gitrog monster.
Ooh, Gave, as your commander?
Jave.
Guave.
Maybe. Maybe. But this one is actually of a spell or ability an opponent controls, so never mind.
Ooh, ooh.
Yeah, so you can't sacrifice your own lands and get them back.
Darn it.
Although, if you were going to do that Abzan Gitrog, I'd look at Anafenza, just because it hates other people's graveyards for fun.
Yeah. But, yeah, that was. That was what I expected to do.
Yeah, very cool. And do you know what? Well, just if any of you out there have a genuinely well-constructed, passionate defense of mass land destruction, and you feel we're totally wrong, remember two things. One, these are just our opinions, and you can ignore them. And the beautiful things about opinions is you don't have to listen to them. But I would love to hear a well-written or spoken, if you want to contact me, defense of mass land destruction.
Yeah.
Because the best one I've ever heard is, well, it ends games, doesn't it? But to me, that it needs more than that.
So by all means, send all of your comments to cast@commanderinmtg.com. Once again, now that you have your pens in hand, it's cast@commanderinmtg.com. And if you have any complaints about the show, of course, you should tweet it at copain26. That's our complaint account. So all complaints about the show go to that account.
Or anything.
Yeah, anything about life.
Complaints about anything.
I tell you what, for giggles, this week only, so between now and when you hear the next show, if you tweet a life complaint at me, I will give you a Dear Auntie style agony aunt response on Twitter within 48 hours.
That is beautiful. So you heard it, folks.
Anything in life.
Send any kind of life complaint or request about how to handle a life issue. This is the Dear Abby for the Americans.
It's an English name, so we'll have Dear Algernon.
Dear Algernon at copain26.
Copain26. If you beautiful. Write us a genuine nice email about defense of mass land destruction, if there's a particularly good one, I'll read it out on an episode. Just as an afterthought, I think. So encourage well-written. And I won't read swears.
You'll just bleep them.
I won't. Maybe
You know,
there is a Japanese single on iTunes called Dear Algernon.
What's that?
Well, I don't know if it's Japanese, but the name of the person who performs it seems to be Japanese.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, we are getting, we're super close to the end of the show. By the way, guys, we are getting a lot of mailbag content, so I think we'll be doing a mailbag sooner rather than later. We have, no joke, in the last 2 months, we've gotten dozens of emails, and so it's a matter of sorting them and choosing which ones will be good to read on the air and respond to. We're looking for provocative things, so if you have a spirited defense of MLD, it's likely not only will, you know, we might cover it as a one-off, but it'll probably end up in our mailbag so we can talk about it for a few minutes. Remember, our email address is cast@commanderinmtg.com. So, thanks for tuning in, everybody. this was pretty cool, guys. I enjoyed talking about it. I admit I had some doubts about talking about MLD because I thought it was a 5-minute don't do it conversation. Turns out we talked about it for a while. So if you're still here, listeners, and you want to support the podcast for all the good things we put inside of your ears, some of them don't have legs, head over to patreon.com/commanderatmtg or give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. We love our listeners. Our last episode, I don't think we said it enough, guys, actually. It was sort of implied, and at the end of it, I was so emotionally distraught I didn't actually say thank you to everyone who made this first year. That's all of you. You listeners, you made this first year of Commander, and awesome, absolutely awesome. We cannot wait to meet the rest of you in the second year, and then the third year. And then we'll turn into liches, and we'll do this forever.
And then we can finish the encyclopedia.
Yeah.
If any of the listeners would like to volunteer themselves to be one of my Horcruxes, email in.
Remember, cast@commanderinmtg.com. Subject, Horcrux for Sean. So We love our listeners, of course, and we are incredibly grateful to all of the patrons. You too can join our community and be exactly like Zach Williams, Mark Coley, or Jesse Durant, mate.
Jesse Durant, isn't it? Like, Bonza. The trick is...
Kangaroo.
Everything you say, you have to sound like you're asking a question, even when you're not. And that's how you
even
do it.
Even when you're not.
Hi, Jesse. How's it going? Playing some soccer down in the A-League. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, I think we just lost him as a patron. I think we even have Wiz Fizzit as a patron. We'll talk about him at some point. And say thank you, of course. So come play test with us.
He's fun on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, he is. He's really, really sharp guy. They're all really sharp guys. They're all from the same meta, too. And it would be awesome if they would come play test with us. And, of course, if anyone is donating at the $10 or more per episode, you come join the patron chat we host over on Facebook, and we'll talk. We talk pretty much all day long. Oh, I love it, actually. I spent the early part of the anniversary. Today, we're recording this on the 26th of May, but I spent the early part of the anniversary just chatting with folks on Facebook. It was awesome.
I was just going to say, I went away for a few months, as you know, and I came back, and the patron chat came into existence whilst I was away. And I came back, and there was all these lovely people talking insight. I've learned so much about Commander just from talking to people. Because of that chat, it's been wonderful.
Yeah. And it's a little different from the deck testing group, too. There's a slightly different timbre to the conversation. So come join us. Our theme song was created for the podcast by who?
I did that.
Nate Burgess did that. And it's always fun to be able to choose between a variety of some variations on the theme. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto. You can reach him at mrpicto.co.uk. And he had a significant amount of assistance from Kelly, my wife. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his server space. You can reach us by going to our website. Don't tell anybody. Okay, I lied. Tell everyone. CommanderandMTG.com. Our email, we may have mentioned this once or twice, is cast@CommanderandMTG.com. You can find us on all of the social media by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. And individually on Twitter, I'm at Ketjak, K-E-T-J-A-K.
I am at Copain26. I'm not spelling it. It's already been spelled.
And I'm at Mr. Blorg.
And that, gentlemen, is our show.
Dun, 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 dun.
Commandarin. Someone else might have to take a lead on this being a good thing, because I don't fucking stomach it.
Boop.
What? Why is that a boop?
I think he said, I don't know if I can. But it did sound like he said, I don't know if I stomach it.
No, I did say if I can stomach it.
Boop.
I'll say it again. Someone else is going to have to take a lead on this being a good thing, because I don't know if I can stomach it.
There you go.